Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
A monk once asked the ancient Chinese Zen master Yunmen, "What is the teaching of the whole lifetime of Buddha?" Yunmen replied, "An appropriate response." Welcome, everyone. So I want to begin by posing two questions for everyone to kind of think about, to ponder, to keep in the back of your mind. Question number one, does an awakened being or one who has attained realization or insight, do they experience suffering and vexations or challenges? And question number two, what do you envision when you think of the life of an awakened being or how a realized being lives in the world? So if I went around the room right now here in the Zendo and also in the Zoomdo, as I like to call it, if I went around and asked everyone, what brought you to this practice? What brought you to Zen practice, to Dharma practice? I would perhaps get many different answers from different people. Some people come to practice because they want to feel more peaceful. They want to feel more calm. Some want to improve their focus, their concentration. Some want to kind of cultivate more discipline in their lives. Others do it for health reasons. Some do it because they want to really cultivate mindfulness, mindful awareness, and perhaps many other reasons. But maybe one of the most important reasons for coming to practice for each one of us is that perhaps we are looking for a way of living in and of navigating in this deeply troubled world that we're living in, a way that is truly conducive to peace, to compassion, to loving kindness, to well-being for ourselves and for others. And I don't really need to point out to anyone here just how troubled a world this is that we're currently living in. I think we can all see it. We can feel it on a daily basis. We watch the news even for a few minutes, or we look at our news feeds on our cell phones, and we immediately feel the heavy weight of it on us. We see the violence, the hatred, the genocide, war, greed and avarice, division and separation. We see all of this that is so prevalent in the world right now and has been for some time. We see the three poisons of greed or attachment, of anger, hatred or aversion, and of ignorance or delusion permeating the world around us. We see this daily. We see this on a constant basis. And so how do we respond to this? How do we respond to all of this that we see, that we feel? How can we help or be of benefit to those who are suffering? And how do we keep from falling into despair or hopelessness ourselves? And the reality is that there is absolutely no easy answers to this. No one has an easy answer to these questions. And I would say to be wary of anyone who claims to have any easy answers to these questions. But I was recently asked a question by a dear Dharma friend, one of the members of this community. They asked me perhaps one of the quintessential questions with regard to Buddhist practice. That question was, how can we apply the Great Way? How can we apply the path of Buddha in our daily lives? And this is a very important question, a very important question to ask ourselves, to think about, to examine. It is one of the quintessential questions, I think, for each of us to ask ourselves on a regular basis, to remember why we come to any spiritual practice. How do we live the Dharma? How do we live ethically and skillfully in such a deeply troubled world? How do we embody and actualize the life of a bodhisattva in the world? How do we wake up from our delusions and from the grip of these poisons? How do we live an awakened and skillful life? So Tenshin Rep Anderson Roshi says the following, and it opens with the quote, the verse that I opened with. A monk once asked the ancient Chinese Zen master Yun Men, what is the teaching of the whole lifetime of Buddha? And Yun Men replied, an appropriate response. These words are simple, but it is often difficult moment by moment to realize what is an appropriate response to the complex and turbulent world in which we live. Fortunately, there are teachings and practices to show us the way in this great endeavor. These practices invite us to enter the mind of Buddha. They are based on the Bodhisattva vow to become a Buddha in order to benefit and liberate all living beings. In Sanskrit, the Bodhisattva practices are called the paramitas, which is commonly translated as perfections or as perfect realizations. Bodhisattvas, or aspiring bodhisattvas, as we all are, train in the paramitas, in the conventional or relative world in which we find ourselves. These great practices help us to be kind and compassionate within the limits of our understanding of the world as it appears to us. They help us to offer our compassionate and kind action in the relative world, and at the same time, they train our minds so that we open to wisdom, which is the realization of the ultimate and inconceivable nature of reality. When these practices are perfected by wisdom leaping beyond, they free us from our limited understanding. They help us realize the place where we really are, the only place from which an appropriate response is fully realized. An appropriate response. What a beautiful way to put this. An appropriate response. And this really refers to what the Buddha called upaya, or skillful means. What is needed? What is required of us? How might I be of benefit? How can I avoid creating more harm, more suffering in the world? An appropriate response is one that takes into account time, place, and circumstances in each situation, each moment that we encounter. The way of a bodhisattva, one who wishes to be of benefit and to liberate all beings, includes the practice of these six paramitas. And the paramitas or perfections, or again, perhaps more accurately, perfect realizations, are really a description of awakening, of liberation. They are the aspects or the qualities of a bodhisattva, one who aspires to cross over to the other shore of liberation for the benefit of all beings, to help others cross over to the shore of liberation. And these six paramitas are generosity, ethical and moral conduct, patience, diligence or diligent effort, concentration, and wisdom. These are the six paramitas. In essence, these paramitas are what awakening looks like in our daily life. The paramitas are part of the expression, the embodiment, the actualization of our Dharma practice, our bodhisattva practice in the world. There is no separation between our practice and our everyday life. Our life is the ground of our practice. How could it be otherwise? And this evening, I'm not going to talk about all six of the paramitas. I really want to focus a bit on one of those paramitas. It's usually the second in the list of paramitas, and that is sila or shila paramita, the perfect realization of morality and ethical conduct. Although it's important for us to realize that all six of these paramitas are very much interconnected. each one giving life to the others. And so sila is often translated as discipline or moral discipline as well. But I think that other translations, which I prefer, are ethical clarity and moral sincerity. Sila is really about deeply looking at ourselves and having clarity and sincerity in our choices, our intentions, and our conduct, our engagement with the world. And in Zen practice, sila is really the bodhisattva precepts. Our 16 bodhisattva precepts are what sila is in Zen practice. And in other practices, they also have precepts, whether they call them precepts or refer to them as something else. In Thich Nhat Hanh's Plum Village tradition, for example, they have the 14 mindfulness trainings, which very much serve the same function as our 16 bodhisattva precepts. And when it comes to navigating skillfully and ethically in an increasingly troubled and divided world, such as the one we live in, moral and ethical conduct or precepts is a bedrock of our practice. It is one of the most important aspects of our practice, along with Zazen. In Zen, when we examine moral and ethical conduct, we look to the precepts, to our 16 bodhisattva precepts, as a guide or a compass to walking this path and finding our way in the world. All the paramitas are really, at all times, about being in relationship. And sila, or precepts, this morality and ethics, are certainly about being in relationship. We are, in every moment of our life, in relationship. From the moment we are born, we are in relationship. We're in relationship with others. We're in relationship with the world around us. And not to be forgotten, we are always in relationship with ourselves. So how do we live in relationship with ourselves, with others, with our planet, in the most skillful ways possible, given the immense challenges, the suffering, the division that we all encounter in the world? Again, there is no easy answer. But I want to share some words from John Daido Luri Roshi. Daido Roshi says, "Enlightenment and morality are one. Enlightenment without morality is not true enlightenment. Morality without enlightenment is not complete morality. Zen is not beyond morality, but a practice that takes place within the world based on moral and ethical teachings. The Buddhist precepts form one of the most vital areas of spiritual practice. In essence, the precepts are a definition of the life of a Buddha, of how a Buddha, you and I, functions in the world. They are how enlightened beings live their lives, relate to other human beings, make moral and ethical decisions, manifest wisdom and compassion in everyday life. The precepts provide a way to see how the moral and ethical teachings in Buddhism come to life." And so sila paramita, or the precepts, really are our guide, like a compass, that points the way to living skillfully, living ethically in this troubled world, and to do so not only for ourselves, but as a benefit to all beings on our planet. And so the precepts really are the answer to that question posed by my Dharma friend. The precepts are how we bring the Dharma into our daily life, how we express and apply the path of the Buddha in the world. The precepts, like the six paramitas, really correspond with the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. I see the three refuges really corresponding with right view or right understanding. The three pure precepts corresponding to right intention or right thinking. And right action, right speech, right livelihood really correspond to the 10 grave precepts. And the 16 precepts, our 16 bodhisattva precepts, begin with the three refuges. We go for refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. These are the first three of our precepts. And for me, they are the foundation of sila, of our practice. The three refuges I like to compare them to being like the roots of a giant oak tree. They are the foundation from which the other precepts grow and proceed. And last month at our Zazen Kai, we posed a question for contemplation at the end of Zazen Kai. And that question was essentially, in this troubled world, in this difficult world that we live in full of challenges, I asked everyone, how do you see the precepts? How do you see them unfolding in your life? What do they mean to you? And we had many absolutely beautiful shares on this question. And I said at the time that for me, the three refuges, these three jewels, these three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are really like my North Star. They are like my compass. They are what I look to in moments of confusion, of despair, of hopelessness, because they remind me always, coming back to these three refuges, remind me of who I wish to be, who I am, who each one of you is in the world, a Buddha. They remind me of how I wish to live in the world. I wish to live the teachings of the Dharma in the world. And they remind me of who I wish to live these teachings for and who I wish to live these teachings with, the Sangha, each one of you, as well as the Mahasangha, the greater Sangha, all the many beings. And so when we look at the precepts, it's really, from the beginning, it is of utmost importance to understand that the precepts are not laws or rules. They are not commandments of thou shalt do this, thou shalt not do that. They are not fixed. They are not unyielding laws or rules that are applied absolutely in every situation in the same way without examination and discernment. They are guides. The precepts are guides that help us to cultivate upaya, skillful means, to discern what is an appropriate response in any given situation or circumstance, and to respond openly for the benefit of all life. Zen Master Dogen pointed to this in his teachings when he described the precepts as our deeper truth. He says the moral and ethical teachings are our deeper truth. We don't train in and apply the precepts to become something different, to become something or someone better. The precepts are about expressing and actualizing what is already there within each one of us, our deeper truth. And so the precepts are really invitational in that each of the precepts, each of these 16 precepts is an invitation in every moment to examine what is truly an appropriate response. What is of benefit to others, to the world around us, including ourselves. Each of the precepts is like a mirror that reflects ourselves back to ourselves and begs the question, how can I be of benefit in this moment? How can I be of service in this moment? What can I give of myself in this moment? And one of the problems that we often encounter that we create for ourselves is that we often, when we're faced with these difficulties, these challenges, with all of this, these things, all of this suffering that we see in this troubled world, we want to focus on the big picture, the grand picture. We start to ask ourselves, or to think to ourselves, how can I resolve this entire situation all at once? We see suffering in the world, we see beings suffering, and we immediately think of this grand picture. How can I solve this? How can I resolve this all in one shot? This is often impossible, of course. We create more obstacles, more frustration, more suffering for ourselves in this way. This causes us more confusion, more discontentment. In actuality, we most often need to look at what I can do in this moment, in this time, this place, what is right in front of me. Start right where you are, as Pema Chodron often teaches. Start right where you are in this moment. What is right in front of you? What is an appropriate response to what is right in front of you. For this deeply troubled and divided world to change, if we wish to see change in this world, it will take a collective shift in consciousness. This is what I believe. That it takes a collective shift in consciousness in how we see the world. But any collective shift in consciousness first requires an individual shift in consciousness for each and every one of us. How am I seeing the world? Am I seeing it through the eyes of delusion, of separation? Or am I seeing it through the eyes of awakened compassion and wisdom? Sila Paramita, or the precepts, enable us to see through the eyes of awakened compassion and wisdom. What is needed of me in each moment? What is an appropriate response in each moment? And Daito Luri Roshi says, the three pure precepts define the harmony, the natural order of all things. If we eschew evil, practice good, and actualize good for others, we are in harmony with the natural order of all things. Of course, it is one thing to acknowledge the three pure precepts, but how can we practice them? How can we not create evil? How could we practice good? How can we actualize good for others? The way to do that is shown in the 10 grave precepts, which reveal the functioning of the three pure precepts. And so this brings us to the three pure precepts of our Bodhisattva precepts. And these three pure precepts: do not create evil, practice good, and actualize good for others. They may seem overly broad or overly simple when we hear them, but they really are the foundation for the 10 grave precepts that follow. If the three refuges are like the roots of a giant oak tree, then for me, the three pure precepts are like the strong trunk that arises from those roots and supports all of the branches. They are a reminder of what is skillful, what is beneficial, what is appropriate. Do not create evil. Practice good. Actualize good for others. Daito Luri Roshi describes the three pure precepts as a bottomless source of teachings. They encompass the entirety of the Buddha Dharma. He adds that the three pure precepts are pure because they are absolute. They are pure because they reach everywhere. And he reminds us that evil, when we say do not create evil, evil has no independent existence. It is dependent upon its creator. We create evil, or we can eschew it. The pure precepts are really the foundation for that shift in consciousness, for living in harmony with all life. And finally, we have the 10 grave precepts, which are like the strong branches of the tree that arise from the roots and the trunk that supports them. They go out in all directions and bear leaves or fruit depending on the seeds that we cultivate in the world. Practicing or actualizing the 10 grave precepts really gives life to that harmony. It gives life to that shift in consciousness, which arises from that foundation of the three pure precepts. And the 10 grave precepts are always applied out of a reverence for all life and out of compassion for the benefit of all life. They are not fixed. They are not unyielding. And I just want to mention briefly these 10 grave precepts. I won't go into them in any detail, as Sensei does a series of classes on the precepts for those who are interested in learning more deeply about the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. But these 10 grave precepts are: number one, affirm life, do not kill. And we should remember that we often think when we hear do not kill of simply taking a life, but we can kill in so many ways. We can kill in so many different ways. We can kill a person's hope. We can kill a person's self-esteem, self-worth. We can kill a relationship with another person. There are so many ways in which we can kill. And so we need to see this precept in its entirety. The second grave precept, be giving, do not steal. The third grave precept, honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. And we should understand that the precept in no way tells us to not engage in sexuality. We are human beings, and this is part of our normal life. But it's about honoring the body and not misusing sexuality, not taking another for granted. When we engage in sexuality only for our own pleasure, our own benefit, without thinking of the other person, without taking the other person into account, we are violating this precept. The fourth, manifest truth, do not lie. And again, these precepts are applied from a place of compassion, from a place of reverence for all life. And so there may be circumstances where we need to lie. There may be circumstances where we need to conceal a truth if it is the skillful thing to do, out of reverence for all life and out of compassion. The precepts are not unyielding. They are not fixed. They are to be applied skillfully. The fifth, proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. This often refers to intoxicants, but it can refer to a great many things. And again, like the precept of sexuality, this precept does not tell us not to consume alcohol at all, ever, under any circumstances. It simply reminds us to proceed clearly and to not cloud the mind, to not cloud our clear seeing. And this applies to so many things that we consume, not just intoxicants, but other things that we consume, the things that we read, the things that we watch on television, so many things that can really cloud the mind, that can cloud our judgment, that can cloud our clear seeing. The next precept says, see the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not slander others. Do not be critical of others. See the perfection in all beings, or at least try to see the perfection of all beings. Don't criticize others without looking at ourselves. We too make mistakes. And so we should proceed by seeing the perfection of all life and not speaking of others' errors and faults. The next precept says, realize self and other as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. We need to see beyond the duality of self and other. To not elevate ourselves by blaming others, putting ourselves ahead of others. The next precept says, give generously, do not be withholding. We often think of giving as giving perhaps financially, giving material things, but there are so many things that we can give. Each one of us has so many individual gifts, unique gifts perhaps to ourselves that we can share with all the many beings. And so this precept reminds us to not be withholding, to be generous, to give generously of our time, of our love and compassion, of our kindness, to give generously to others. The next precept says, actualize harmony, do not be angry. And the wording of this one is always interesting to me, because anger, of course, is a very natural human emotion. Who in this room does not experience anger at times? I know I'm not that person. Anger is a very natural emotion for each and every one of us. But there is a difference between anger and hatred. Kiyose recently shared in one of our Thursday evenings a beautiful insight. She spoke of an experience that she had where she experienced anger because she saw the mistreatment of someone else. But she was able to really see that anger within herself that was arising, to acknowledge it, to be with it. But she said, it was okay for me to be angry, but never, never hatred. I would not allow myself to let that anger become hatred, to become ill will, to wish ill will on someone else. And this is extremely important. This precept really points to this. Anger is a natural emotion that we all experience, but how do we respond to that anger? Do we respond appropriately? Do we respond skillfully? Or do we allow that anger that we experience to turn into ill will, to turn into hatred? And finally, the last of the 10 grave precepts says, experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. We come back to the roots, to the three treasures, to not defiling these three treasures, to seeing them as the refuges that they are for us to come back to remember again and again who we are, who we wish to be in the world, what our true nature is. And Daido Luri Roshi, I want to share one last thought from him. He says, we practice the precepts. We practice them the same way we practice the breath or the way we practice a koan. To practice means to do. We do the precepts. Once we are aware of the precepts, we become more sensitive to the moments when we break them. When you break a precept, you acknowledge that, take responsibility for it, and come back to the precept again. It's just like when you work with the breath in Zazen. Practice is not a process for getting someplace. It is not a process that gets us to enlightenment. Practice is, in itself, enlightenment, not two. It is one thing to study the precepts, but the real point of practice is to be the precepts through and through, to manifest them with our lives. The precepts are a sword that kills and a sword that gives life. The sword that kills is the absolute basis of reality, no self. The sword that gives life is the compassion that comes out of that realization of no self. The precepts are the sword of the realized mind. So again, how do we live ethically and skillfully in this troubled world? How do we live an awakened life? Sila Paramita, or the Bodhisattva precepts, point the way. Moment by moment, they point the way. We become the precepts. We manifest or actualize them in our life, moment by moment, day by day, year by year. We wield them not as hard, fixed, unyielding laws or rules, but as skillful means, as an appropriate, awakened response. Does an awakened person, a realized being, experience suffering or challenges, discontent? Notice that Daido Luri Roshi in the reading, in this last reading, says, when we break the precepts, not if, when we break the precepts, we will break the precepts. We will at times break the precepts, but we come back again and again to the precepts. We live the precepts, we bring them to life. And so we return to them again and again. And this is not to avoid taking responsibility when we break a precept, because we need to acknowledge that. We need to see that and take responsibility for it. But we remind ourselves to come back to the precept. Whenever we break a precept, we remind ourselves to come back to the precept. Enlightenment or awakening, for me, is an unfolding process. Enlightenment isn't this bang, we have this experience, I'm awakened, I'm enlightened. For me, an awakening or enlightenment is not like this. It is an unfolding practice, an unfolding process. We said practice is the ground. Our life is our practice. Our practice is our life. And so enlightenment or awakening is an unfolding within us. The precepts are wisdom leaping beyond. Beyond what? Beyond our concepts, beyond our descriptions of living a skillful life in a deeply troubled world. It is beyond those concepts. It is doing the precepts. It is being the precepts. It is bringing them to life each and every day, moment by moment. The precepts are how a realized or awakening being lives, relates to others, makes moral and ethical decisions, responds skillfully and appropriately, and manifests compassion and wisdom in everyday life. And I want to share one of my favorite quotes. This is also from Daido Luri Roshi. He says, "We tend to build dreams of separateness that eventually become nightmares of alienation and isolation. And then we struggle to awaken from the nightmare that we ourselves have created. To practice this precept is to wake up. It is to wake up. There are only Buddhas."